Bangarra's latest production marks a significant milestone in the history of one of Australia's leading performing arts companies. 30 years ago, Bangarra's founders devised a new art form which blends traditional movement, Western classical and contemporary dance. At the time, it was revolutionary. The idea that a contemporary dance company could create new work rooted in tradition. Now, Stephen Page, the artistic director of Bangarra, doesn't rest on his laurels. The workaholic artistic director and his company produce new works every year and stage pieces from their repertoire. They tour the country and the world, and they often go back to the source, working in communities like Yirrkala. The new production, 30 Years of 65,000, looks back not just at the major work Yunaipan, but it's something a bit more obscure, well, to me anyway. It's a Dutch contemporary dance work by a Czech choreographer inspired by the dances of Groot Island. I'm with Stephen Page, and I start by asking him if he could have predicted the past three decades.
No. Well, I think because you're just so in the moment, aren't you? Like, you just make the best of what you've got at the time and the moment, and yeah. 30 years later. I think that's putting it into perspective of 30 years of 65,000 was sort of more like we're just scratching the surface compared to the age of our beautiful heritage.
Mm. And, you know, choreographic work in some ways is ephemeral. It passes. But this new production, you're going back to the old choreography. I mean, how do you bring back how do you retain a memory of how you choreographed a certain work? Do you have to look at footage? I mean,
yeah. Look, the work's chosen. I wanted to be a little bit different to what we created in 2009 was our 20 years. And that performance was like 1 hour, an interval for 20 minutes, and then another hour. I mean, we could have gone from sunset to sunrise, like old time ceremonies. But, it was more of a best-of program, so it was like excerpts of all the works. I think we did every production, we did a small excerpt. When 30 years was coming around, I kept thinking, oh, because it was, you know, we create one new work a year. So 18 months ago, marketing and people in the company were saying, you know, what's the 30 years going to be? And I thought, oh, well, I didn't want to do another sort of best-of program. So I always wanted to bring back Francis Ring's Yunaipan. That was created in 2004, and I commissioned that work for the Adelaide Festival when I was director of it. And it was Fran's second major work. She had done Rations in 2002 in Walkabout. And her and her sister Gina Rings were, I think Gina Rings, her sister was the one that talked about Ngunnawal man David Yunaipan and who he was. And I just thought for that program of the festival would have been great. So what is it? 15 years later? 15 years later, I just thought it would be great to put in the 30 years. And then what other works and experiences would work with Yunaipan for an evening of celebration? I just sort of started to brew out some ideas. But Yunaipan was the first thing that sort of was set in place and then was trying to work around it.
Mm. And that work, I was saying to a colleague, some dance work, some of Bangarra's work is so solidly identified with a particular dancer. And I can only have Patrick Thaiday in my mind when I think of that production.
Yeah. He was, and the dancers at that time in 2004, Sydney Saltner, Sunny Townsend, Deborah Brown, Yolandi Brown, a lot of Queenslanders, a lot of Murrays, Patrick Thaiday, Judy Boy Borgia. There was a whole group of dancers at that time, and Patrick would have been in the company for about 3 years then. So he just seemed, I think his energy and he's just seemed to write and fit for that, to take on that spirit and to carry, because it is a biographical sort of take on. It was the first time we took on looking at someone's life and their existence and trying to get into the mind and spirit and body of that person. And the fact that, you know, being an inventor, let alone an Indigenous one, and trying Francis to get into the mind of that and where he was from, and that's sense of a foot in each world. So Patrick, yeah, he loved it. You're right. I mean, I remember when I first saw him in the rehearsal room, and I was just like, wow, it's just, and his physicality and his spirit as well. Like, he was a great muse, Patrick. He would just stand there and you would tell a story, and then we would talk about ways of digesting that, and then how to embody that story, and then how would that shape the physicality. And he was in rehearsals, actually. A lot of the alumni came back and helped this next generation. And I think that was beautiful. Like, Fran called in Deb and Yolandi, and they were all revisiting and looking at videos. And we've had a lot of stuff, you know, come from analog to digital and keeping up with the new times, and most of our works have been like that now. They've been sort of crossed over. Same with David's music now. We've been able to put it in a good digital platform internally at Bangarra. So it was great to go back over that and get those alumni in there.
So who would, for instance, in the excerpt of UNIAP and in this new production, who would be Patrick Thaiday?
Tyrell Delvery. I keep saying Delvary, Delvery. Tyrell, once again, Queenslander, North Queensland mob. And he, similar physicality to Patrick, really flexible. I nicknamed Tyrell Froggy because he's got these great webbed hands and feet, and he can jump and he can land so quietly. So he has a really malleable body, and he can just, he's very taller than Patrick. I wasn't actually in rehearsals when the two casts met, and that passing on of knowledge and story was passed on. So Tyrell will be playing Mr. Yunaipon in this production.
What are the other, we're obviously getting a sense of some of the defining moments in the life of this dance company, but what are the other productions that we're
programming? Yeah, we looked at, I've been wanting to do, and I got fixated about it when I had heard about Yuri Killian, a Czech Republic man who fled Prague when he was 21. Russians were invading during the war, and I think, he ended up on running away and ending up on a train line and never came back. And he studied dance at the Royal Ballet and in England, and he went to Stuttgart Ballet, but he became the director of a young choreographer quite in demand at the time through the 70s, and then took over Netherlands Dance Theatre in mid-70s. And he was the it thing at the time, like around 79-80, and there were people around the world, people in Europe, especially Europe, because contemporary dance, neon classical, that whole ballet russe moving into contemporary dance was such a big thing. You know, George Balanchine, who defected from Russia and lived in New York and then was New York City Ballet's director, they were all around telling narrative, Western, I suppose, stories through this form of ballet, but presenting it with costume, lights, and theatre. And then this contemporary, you know, Rudolf Nureyev and Mikhail Baryshnikov and all the big Russian, all defected to America, and they were all doing their Swan Lakes and Nutcrackers and all these big stories. And Yuri came along and sort of started to do a neon classical, a breakdown of classical, and a little bit more, I don't know, the different in narrative, and he was a bit more abstract. And anyway, he was the it thing, and they said, do you want to go anywhere in the world to be inspired? What dance would you be inspired? He said, I want to see Aboriginal traditional dance. So he came out in 1980. And I think at the time, visual art obviously was the big commodity in Australia, and a lot of connections to traditional living song and language or visual art were pretty much dominant in the north, obviously. And they all gathered at Groote Eylandt for him. I think there was a big ceremony over 3 days. And there's a documentary called On the Road to Stamping Ground. And it's about the Czech Republic, Czech guy, choreographer on Groote Eylandt. Biggest mob danced and did ceremony for 3 days. And he was to be inspired and then respond and create a work. And that work is Stamping Ground. And it's about a 23-minute work. It was supposed to be a bigger expression, but I think he was just overwhelmed. And he says in the documentary that he was overwhelmed with what he had saw, the body, the mimicry, the humor, the lightness, the spirit. He was totally overwhelmed. And I'd known about him doing the work when I was in college. So I joined college in 1983 and he created Stamping Ground in 1983. All my years through the late 80s in City Dance and knowing about modern dance, Netherlands Dance Theatre were sort of the big contemporary dance theatre, sophisticated, top of the world type company. And then I was doing a work for the Australian Ballet at the end of the 96 with David. We did a work called Alchemy with Australian Ballet, and Fiona Foley did the set design way back then. We were a bit radical back then. And he was doing a work, Yuri Killian was doing one of his works for Australian Ballet. And I had said to him, I said, oh, wouldn't it be great if our company could do your work, Stamping Ground? It'd be like it coming back on country and it'd be embodied through these urban indigenous dancers who... in the first place, that you were inspired by this traditional form of dance. And he giggled. He just sort of thought, you know, you're doing a better version of that than I would be, you know, like this sort of responding in a contemporary way. Anyway, it turned out 18 months ago, he thought, yeah, why don't you do the work? So we've had his person out here who's been rehearsing it and six dancers. And you should see it because it's a Mexican composition. It's lots of percussion and rattles, lots of snare drumming. And I think that comes from, he thought it was quite humorous the way they Yungul and different mob used to isolate their ribs and stomp their feet and quite quirky. And I think there was a mimicry about it and a humor about it. Then the music sort of, it's like when he went to listen to music, he wanted to find something that was sort of a bit circusy, a bit sort of humorous. And so there's lots of percussion. A Mexican composer who created it in 1940 or something. So this is weird, sort of, not weird, but this is sort of left a field of composition and movement and inspiration. And the six of our dancers, I think it's quite historical. Like it's quite a moment because he's inspired. And then he said to me, he says, Stephen, I kept saying on country. And he said, what does on country mean? And I said, like your work's coming full cycle. It's coming back. And I want to curate this because it's our 30 years of 65,000 years. And so he's been along for the ride of it coming back on country. And it opened last Thursday. And it was quite amazing because a lot of the non-Indigenous ballet world, contemporary world, are aware of his works. And they came and they were just blown away by the way the Bangara dancers emulated this movement and completely put another sort of spin on the movement.
So Bangara has never performed this particular work. I mean, it's not...
Well, often. This is the first time we've had a non-Indigenous choreographer, let alone being a Czech Republic man. Who ran away from war at 21. I don't know why I was obsessed with wanting to do it, but I just wanted to see our dancers today. Because our dancers, their training is classical dance, contemporary dance, yoga, Pilates, cardio, all different types of practices, which makes up their Western feel and physicality. Mm-hmm. But the biggest injection for Bangara is the constant cultural learning of traditional living Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander dance. So there's this wonderful diverse of movement. And there's 30 works now, and the works have evolved just as the practices have evolved in the two worlds, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so people go, you know, sure, you're barefoot and you're on your knees the most. We're probably the only company in the world that will strongly dance in barefoot, can be quite stylized and can be on our knees and controlled, and this mimicry and this spirituality, connection of land and this fluidity, I suppose. It's like now we can say we have a dance language, which we do, and we've got a pantry of compositions and song and stories, 30 or so works. So there's a language there now. And so I thought now for them to interpret a work that was done back in 83 from a choreographer who trained in ballet and his dances were all technical, and yet they were coming from the outside in. It's like we've learnt from the inside out, if that makes sense.
Mm.
I'm not making it. Anyway, dance is a hard one to describe because people think you just get up and do 5, 6, 7, 8 choreography. But what sets Bangarra apart is the stories. It's funny, like I was talking to someone the other week and they said, you know, there's no other Bangarra in the world. You know, there's no other First Nations full-time dance company. And I go, yeah. And I tend to forget, like, there's only one of that kind in the world. And wow, it's Bangarra. And, you know, we're going to Canada at the end of the year doing a 5-week tour. And, you know, mob in Toronto and that Six Nations reservation, they say, can you come here and start a Bangarra? And I just think everywhere I go in the world, like even when we went to Copenhagen where he did workshops with kids from Greenland, they come over and the mob there and they just have this amazing face and spirit and there's a black sensibility. And someone said, what's that? And I said, I don't know. It's just a humor and it's just a connection. And we just all got on. You could just, even when we didn't even understand each other's language, but it was through the movement that there was a similar sort of groundedness. And the woman just was like, wouldn't it be great if you guys could come here? And so I started thinking of a Northern and Southern Hemisphere idea of grabbing every First Nation style and starting our own big operatic ring cycle. I don't know. I've got enough to do, haven't I?
You do have enough to do. Looking back over those 30 years of this extraordinary life of this company, what do you, as artistic director, what are the defining moments in that history?
Look, my brothers were so instrumental and the relationships. I think, you know, we were in the climate, we were distinctive, we're the only ones doing what we were doing. So great opportunities happened, you know, like, and I was young and cocky, you know, someone say, hey, come and create a work for the ballet. Oh, wait a minute, I want to bring Bangarra too. Oh, what can we all do together? Hey, we want you to direct the Sydney opening ceremony, Sydney Olympics. Oh, I want to bring 1,000 mob together, stories and gifts from all over the country and bring them in. Like, I just always loved creating. And I think, and I also think, like, the other night, Saturday night at the Opera House, you know, 600 people standing on their feet. And, you know, it's 2 hours later. I was thinking, oh, these fellas are going to fall asleep. Jaco Pru is going to sing them all to sleep. If anything I was proud of over the 30 years and just sustaining is all the ingredients and all the relationships that allow us to tell stories. And then just all breaking down all those sort of consciousness of people watching our shows, you know. I mean, I remember when we did Bennelong, there was 50,000 people that saw Bennelong. And I mean, I know that's one probably arena Taylor Swift concert, but... But, you know, like Dark Emu, like close to 70,000 people. You know, it's just, yeah, it's just crazy. Like this art form, and it's a great language. It's a great way of breaking down the stereotypes, yeah.
Where do you see yourself in 30 years?
Oh, I don't know. What am I now? I'm 54 and I'm really, Hunter just had a baby and she's adorable, Mila Sophia.
It's your grandfather.
Yeah, and Mila Sophia. And I said, Hunter, she sounds like a cabaret dancer. I love it. It's like, Mila Sophia. She's got a few little Mullanjali names. She's got a couple of going on, Witteramua, Yungle names. She's got about 5 names, that kid. But anyway, she's exciting. And also my son. My son's really, he's exciting at the moment. He's writing and, you know, he
directing did a film.
He's just did a short film. He's in a new ABC show that comes out at the end of the year. He just directed, I think, or he just written a little script for ABC for Play School. And you know, he's been on stage with me since we was young. He was in Spear. He's working on my second feature film with me. He's got projects lined up. So he's just like, Dad, when you leave Bangarra, you're going to come and work with me. I'm excited about working with him. So in 30 years' time, I don't know, I just hope I'm still telling stories.
Stephen Page, this is Away on RN. We're talking about the new Bangarra production, 30 Years of 65,000. Choreographer Frances Rings has had a long association with Bangarra. She began as a dancer in 1993, and now as the company marks its 30th year, she's taken on a more formal role. She's with Away's Rudy Bremer.
My name is Frances Rings and I am Associate Artistic Director with Bangarra Dance Theatre. I'm really enjoying the role. It's busy. There's many facets to the role. I think it's a role that I've probably been rehearsing for many years. But it's really fantastic to kind of have it formalised, and I'm really enjoying working closely with Stephen and with the company, and it feels like the time is right now. You know, what a better time after 30 years and, you know, to see the company expand and grow and restructure and revision and, look forward to new developments happening, yeah.
I would be surprised if people don't know, but you were a dancer in Bangarra and then you choreographed Unaiapin, which is actually the first third of this year's work.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, so I was a dancer. I started out, you know, in the company as a dancer. That was in the good old early days when we were at Waterloo PCYC and Stephen had just done Praying Mantis Dreaming. Jakapura was a 16-year-old, you know, young lad down from Darling Boy, and the company were doing school shows out at Ride and then coming in and doing rehearsals. And I remember I joined and Christine Arnoux joined at the same time. So we both joined the company. We both graduated from NASDA and then were offered contracts with the company. And yeah, it was pretty exciting. We got to tour with Praying Mantis Dreaming and a different company back then. And I remember distinctly kind of going in with these big, huge expectations and like, oh, yeah, I'm going to be doing this and this and this. And then Stephen was like, you're only doing cultural, you know, this year. You know, you're going to just sit you in that role for a while. And I was just shocked. But, you know, I think that was really healthy for me and healthy to spend time with, you know, with our cultural tutors and learn from them and learn that knowledge and that information and get good grounding in that before I then, you know, was put into any of the contemporary works. I guess one of my most powerful memories of being with the company was being in the studio with Jakapura and Stephen and Bernadette and Russell and the other dancers, and knowing that we were a part of something really special. We didn't know what it was, but it was incredible to, you could just feel it in the studio, yeah.
And so where do you see yourself and Bangarra right now?
Right now it's celebrating this incredible legacy. Many people have contributed to that. I look forward to doing the national tour and catching up with some of those people. You know, it feels like it's, you know, it's in a good place. Bangarra's been through some real challenges in its past. I was very fortunate to be up at NASDA for the last 3 years and be involved in the training of this new generation of young people, young dancers and artists coming through. And I'm really proud to say that it feels like our arts is, you know, it's strong. It's in a good place. We have incredible artists out there working in every area of industry, working in the independent scene, working in education, working, you know, professionally in companies and internationally. And I think there's something to be really proud of. I'm one of those people that I go forward acknowledging the past and as a collective with Bangarra and with my peers and with the support of Stephen, and we move forward together. We don't, you know, it's not one person, it's many people that make up this company, and it's even our artistic process is a very collaborative. And, you know, that's something that I think it's really important to remember, that they're cultural values, and it's part of the cultural foundation that we continue that.
There's a few of your former students that are part of the company now. It brings a whole new dynamic as well, that you've gone from being their teacher to being associate artistic director.
Yeah. It changes the relationship. I think, you know, we're still working through that sometimes, especially for some of the younger ones. You know, I'll be like, make sure you go home and you know, you get a good rest and you eat your veggies. And, you know, if they come in with 2 minute noodles, I'm like, no, you can't eat that. So I have to kind of like also let them, you know, they're not students anymore. They're young people who have to go out there into industry. They have to fall over. They have to get up again. They have to learn from that and then move on to the next challenge. And I have to let them do that, you know, and not helicopter parent. Or shall I say boomerang parent? But, yeah, I'm so proud of them. It's really special. And I think it's wonderful to also have that acknowledgement from Stephen as well. You know, we forget that when I was at NASDA, you know, Stephen was in Sydney Dance Company and he'd come in and he directed one of our shows, and we were all just like these big-eyed kids that were just like, oh, my God, can you believe that Stephen Page is here and he wants to, like, work with us? And, you know, it's just another generation. It's important that we continue that. Part of my reason was for going up to NASDA was ensuring that those students up there had access to people working professionally in the industry, so that they come out of their training knowing what the expectations are. And I wanted to give them that grounding. So I think that was really important. And also to bring incredible trainers and incredible First Nations artists, both nationally and internationally, from mainland and Torres Strait into work and to, you know, train at NASDA, to teach at NASDA. So that was really important for me as well, yeah.
I also wanted to ask you about coming back to Uniapan. How do you come back to a work that you made? 2004?
Yeah. 2004, that's right. One of the most important things before we got into the studio was going back to country and meeting the family and getting their permissions. And so I travelled back to South Australia, and, you know, Mr. Unipon's family are spread through Adelaide and the Lower Murray area, and particularly around Rowcan and that community. So, yeah, myself and my sister travelled back there, and they were really excited. They saw the original Unipon in 2004 at the Adelaide Festival, and, yeah, they were excited to hear that it was coming back. And, you know, for them it's about this man who, from their community, their family, who is on our currency. And like for many of us Indigenous people, you can ask someone in the street, do you know who this man is and what his contributions are to our history and to the way we live our lives and our society? And many people don't know. So there's still a lot of growing up, and there's still a lot of education that Australians have to do in regards to acknowledging people in our history, particularly Indigenous people who've made incredible contributions. He transformed the agricultural industry, and not only that, he was, you know, working in government, in policy, and, you know, the injustices that he faced in regards to his book, and going out and doing all of that groundwork, creating this book, and then to not receive the acknowledgement or have somebody else, you know, publish the book. And it was all of his hard work. I mean, yeah, for them, it's still that his story needs to be told and needs to be shared and needs to be in, you know, in the mainstream. And I think when we put this story onto stage, it's our way of doing that and sharing that information and giving that insight. Yeah. So it's an important role. I love my role as a choreographer, that I can use our art form as a vehicle to tell our stories and to bring insight and access to our Black history.
One of the hard things about going back to something that you, I mean, like I don't like to go back to my old interviews. And in fact, I think the very first that I've ever done are possibly gone forever. And there's a little bit of wariness because, like, yeah. You've said, you're a different artist. Yeah, I know that I'm a different storyteller these days. And I guess I am interested in the way that, do you rework something? Like, do you find...
I like to use the word evolve. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to... The essence of the work, I think as a artist, you look at your work and you're always critical. It doesn't matter if it's a painting or if it's a, you know, a sculpture or a dance piece. There's always something in it that you think, there's always imperfections, but that's part of being human and that's part of us as a process, and we're perfectionists and we'll always look for better ways in which to communicate and better ways in which to present our work. And I think for Yanaipon, I had to be really careful because it's the essence of the story was there. It was always about the passions of this man. When this work was originally created, it was part of a double bill. So, you know, it didn't have the full... I couldn't dream it to be a full-length piece, you know. And so I had to kind of think creatively about how I could be inspired by this man and his incredible legacy. But no, I had to fit it into the 35 minutes. So I think structuring it around his passions was really important, and then I could really focus in on the essence of who this man was and what he was about. Structurally, I knew that was right. So I had to be careful I didn't tamper with it too much, because I think when you over-clean something or you over-refine something, you can lose the beautiful rawness or the essence of it. So, yeah, it was really about how do these young people inhabit this work and how can I suit it to their physical vocabulary of today? The dancers were amazing because they picked it up, but they also brought a new freshness to it and a new energy and a new perspective of looking at it. So, for me it was about, some pieces were fine. I didn't untouch, just purely remounted them, and other things it was just sculpting, refining, cleaning and just evolving it.
I guess the very final question, what are you looking for? Like, looking forward, what are you kind of... looking to?
I'm looking to a future with the company, with Bangara, that continues to explore incredible ways of presenting our stories. We have so many amazing stories, past, present, future, that, you know, I think can transform people's perspectives of Indigenous Australia. I'm looking forward to seeing those works being presented on a new generation, continuing to keep it our heart, our cultural values, and just work collaboratively, work as a team, work as a clan, you know, see that these stories travel internationally, travel back to country, travel to main stages around the country, and educate people, move people, do what art does, which is provoke, get a reaction, change people's perspectives. Thank you.
the newly appointed Associate Artistic Director of Bangarra, that's Francis Rings. And the new production, 30 Years of 65,000, is touring nationally. It's on now at the Sydney Opera House until the 13th of July. Then it heads to Canberra and Perth, all the capital cities. There's a link on our website.